the following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Crime Prevention 101. We're so happy you joined us this week. Over the next hour, you'll learn the tips, tricks, and vital information that will help you keep yourself confident and safe. Now, here's your host, Susan Bartlestone.
Welcome to Crime Prevention 101. In case you don't know where you are and you just stumbled on us by accident, this is the Personal Safety Radio Show with an optimistic perspective on a sober subject. I'm your host, Susan Bartlestone, and I am just delighted that you have tuned in and that you're joining me today, because there's nothing I like more than spending my time with you and helping you keep yourself safe. Now, today's show is a little bit of change of pace for you. It's going to be kind of entertaining, and I've got a really good guest for you, and I've got some informative stuff too. But my first guest, his name is Squiggy. He was a New York City cop for about 12 years and then moved into the acting business, where he's playing the bad guys so good. And he totally cracks me up, but he's got real insight into what makes a bad guy bad. Then, in our second segment, we'll be talking to me. I've got some updates for you, some great personal safety and security products that people sent me that I'd like to pass along to you. I've got an email from someone who successfully prevented a crime that I thought you should know about, and a few other odds and ends that hopefully you will find useful. We're going to start off the show, as usual, with our Crime Prevention 101 true crime reporter, Tricia Griffiths from WebSleuths.com, the largest independently owned crime forum out there. And if you haven't been there, you've got to check out WebSleuths. It's an amazing place, and lots of crime prevention information, too. And she's going to talk about what cases people are talking about this week. And last but not least, we've got our Let's Catch a Criminal segment, where I feature a different U.S. Crime Stoppers group each week, and maybe we can help them catch a bad guy. And tonight we're going to be speaking with Darlene Casanza, who's the executive director of the Greater New Orleans Crime Stoppers, and we'll find out about the tremendous job that they're doing after Hurricane Katrina and what the crime landscape is down there. So without any further ado, we're going to talk to Tricia. And hi, Tricia, and I understand you've got a new forum on the WebSleuths you're going to talk about tonight.
Yes, we do. And I'm sorry to say that we had to put this forum up, but it is quickly becoming one of our busiest, Susan, and that is the bullying forum. Now, bully comes from the word bull. It's very simple. A bull will knock you around, hit you in the head, knock you over because it's really powerful and big and comes on really strong.
I never knew that.
That's where the word bullying came from. They're going to bully you. And unfortunately, bullying has been going on probably since the beginning of time. But what makes this unusual is because of the information highway, because of Facebook and Twitter and texting, it has taken on such a cruel and horrible bent that teenagers are now thinking the only way out is to kill themselves. There is a beautiful young girl. Her name was Phoebe Prince. She was from Ireland. And I'm sure many of your listeners have seen her picture. Absolutely gorgeous. She came over here so excited to be in America, was going to high school, and these girls didn't like her, okay? They thought that, she was so pretty. And unfortunately, this is just a case of jealousy. That's what makes it so maddening to me, is like, come on, girls, this is just ridiculous. Anyway, Phoebe went to high school, and she was so pretty that the boys really liked her. Well, these four girls, who weren't really friends to begin with, all got together because they didn't like Phoebe. That was their main, that was their thing that brought them together in this friendship, in this twisted bullying friendship that they formed. And they started to bully Phoebe, not just at school, but on Facebook. They would taunt her with text messages and harassing postings. Now, we don't have a lot of information yet about it, but these four girls have been arrested and are going to be charged as adults.
Good. That means time.
Yes, they're going to serve time. And according to the prosecutor, their evidence is rock solid. Now, some people are saying, come on, you're going overboard. You can't hold these girls responsible. Well, you know what? Somebody's got to be held responsible. And these girls' parents either knew what was going on and didn't do anything, or were so clueless about their girls' lives. And so what's happening is the prosecutor is coming in and saying, you know what? The parents aren't going to do anything. The school didn't do anything. We're going to do something. We're going to make sure that we send a message loud and clear that bullying is not allowed. Now, what happened was Phoebe ended up hanging herself. And
Tricia, where was this? Where did this take place?
This is South Hadley High School, and this is in Boston.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and the high school is South Hadley, and you know, she came from a teeny village in the west of Ireland, so excited to be in the grand United States, and then this happens. And anyway, they're not talking much about the exact nature of the bullying, but it was so horrendous. Now, keep in mind, I want your listeners to keep in mind, the bullying was so horrendous that not only did it drive this beautiful, smart, bright girl to suicide, but it was so bad that the prosecutors have just tremendous confidence that they can not only try these girls as adults, but they can win. So it's going to be very interesting to see when the case goes to trial. It may not go to trial. They may plea bargain. Of course, the lawyers for the girls are saying, you know, they're being overcharged and they're just being made the example of, and it wasn't, you know, it's not what people are saying. And when the truth comes out, they'll see. Well, that's what a lawyer does when they're hired. That's, you know, they're hired to spin the story the way that they want it to be shown. And I think this is just going to be, unfortunately, for Phoebe's family, it's going to be a great lesson for everybody else. And maybe Phoebe's death will have such a tremendous meaning that we can really put a stop to bullying. Because what I find very heartening and disheartening at the same time. Heartening in that our new bully forum is so popular, but disheartening in that it's so popular because so many people are going through it. And, you know, bullying has been around, like I said, forever. My father was bullied. He told me he was relentlessly teased because his shoes were so horrible because he was so poor. And it affected him his whole life. And but you've got to wonder, you know, why is it just getting so much harsher? And I think it's because you can be anonymous behind the computer. You can be anonymous on a text. You can be anonymous if you post on a Facebook, or so you think. You've got to understand, if you go on the Internet, you think you're anonymous, you're really not. You always leave an electronic trail.
And
they will catch you. They'll catch you if you're doing something. So it's up to everybody. It's up to the parents. It's up to the schools to get together and to say enough, enough, especially when it comes to, you know, people like Phoebe. There is a big jealousy thing here going on. And another problem that is really, really causing major issues in bullying is teasing heavy people, especially heavy girls. And that's so
well. Anyone that's different, if they have a physical deformity, I mean, it's endless what they can pick on.
Exactly, you're absolutely right. If you're different, you're going to be picked on. And I'm telling you, Susan, you remember it from school. I do too. The teachers know what's going on. The parents have got to know. But the problem is, here's the problem. Again, we go back to the childhood, and I'm not trying to, you know, take blame off them. But we need to find out the root cause of bullying. And what's happening is these kids are being bullied at home by their parents. They're in more than likely an abusive household where the parents perhaps are abusing each other. Maybe the kids are being abused. They take that anger, take it with them to school, and just push it out on somebody else. And when I've told my son, I have a 13-year-old, and of course he faced bullying like all kids do, and I said, honey, the thing you have to remember about a bully you need to, number one, report it, because this person needs help. Don't worry about getting him in trouble. They need help. And number two, you need to feel sorry for them. You need to feel sorry for them because something is happening to them that a person in fourth grade feels that it's okay to go and mm-hmm. torment another fourth grader. There's something wrong with that child's home life. And they need to get help. There needs to be outside help that steps in to rescue our kids. And once again, it all comes down to parenting. It really does. You know, and if your child is bullying, then you need to step up and say enough and get them to stop. If your child is being bullied, you've got to make noise and let them know.
Unfortunately. You know, and this is the parents have got to be more aware of what the kids are doing on the computers, number one, and there are ways to get into their phones and see what they're doing there. But it's also I really fault the school for this too. The schools have got to be more proactive about bullying. And you know, I've talked to a number of Crime Stoppers groups, and they have set up school Crime Stoppers hotlines where the kids actually can report if they're being bullied. And this is all anonymous. So if you're being bullied or if you see someone being bullied, you can report it. And then the Crime Stoppers groups take that information to the authorities and they start intervening and doing things. And it's all anonymous. So no kid can get in trouble for reporting this. And there are Crime Stoppers organizations in almost every particular, I think they are in every single state and many different communities. And if anyone out there hears this or their kid's being bullied, that's one route to go, I think, for them. Contact the Crime Stoppers. See if they've got a school program. See if you can start a school program. It's one way to get a handle on what's going on. And if Trisha, if I may, just one other thing. If you are a bullying victim, if you've been a bullying victim, this is going to sound simplistic, but look into taking martial arts. There's nothing that increases your self-esteem, your courage, and everything else. It puts your back to the wall and lets you discover the strength that you have. And maybe, you know, suicide will not seem like such the only option that people have.
Well, that is great advice. Great advice, because you can take back the power. Absolutely.
You can. And, you know, Trisha, if anyone on your forum needs any crime prevention advice or personal safety advice, or anyone that goes to this bullying hotline, bullying forum of yours, I'm happy to do it. Let's talk about how I can, you know, maybe step in and be a little more active with people who need some help out there.
I think that would be great, because I did not know about that bullying hotline, and I mm-hmm. think that's a wonderful, wonderful yep. idea. That takes away the fear. And that's what you need, Susan. So let's get together, and maybe we can get together on the forum and let the people know there is an option, and you don't need to fear of retaliation. That'll be wonderful.
Well, Trisha, you know what? We did it again.
Oh, don't tell me we're out of time. We can't be.
We're going to talk again next week. Check out websleuths.com. Now, my incredible audience, stay right where you are, because when we come back, we're going to be talking about going from cop to award-winning actor for playing wise guys. It's quite a story.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. Susan would like to remind you that no absolutes exist in a crime scenario, and no advice can possibly address every variable. Each situation should be evaluated individually and responded to in a way you instinctively judge best. It's Susan's aim on this show to provide you with the information and options that will help you make that instinctive assessment quickly and safely. And if you're already a survivor of the kind of crime we're talking about on the show today, or any other crime for that matter, please remember that there are no right or wrong responses in a criminal encounter, and nothing that happened to you was your fault. Even if you think you used bad judgment in a situation and left yourself vulnerable, that's never an excuse for a crime or for violence. So please, call yourself a survivor, not a victim, and understand that with time, distance, and the proper professional help, you can put what happened into perspective and get on with your life. If you'd like to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, send your comments to solutions@fightsafe.com, and Susan may address some of them on future shows. That email address again, solutions@fightsafe.com. Now, back to Crime Prevention 101.
Hello, Susan Bartlestone here. And you know what? There's plenty of good stuff coming up in the show. Plenty of time left to tune in. So if you know someone that should be listening to this show, who'd like to hear about the Chronicles of Squiggy, the cop-turned wise guy actor coming up, please start tweeting about us. Send out an IM. And don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter, and you can follow me on Facebook. I have almost 3,000 friends now, and I would absolutely love to have you as a friend, too. Okay, so now let's meet our former cop, now actor and playwright, Ralph Squillanti, who is also known as Squiggy. And Ralph was a member of the NYPD from 1968 to 1980, where he served, as he has put it, with less than distinction, because he sounded like and identified a little too much with the bad guys and the wise guys that he knew growing up in a tough area of the Bronx in New York City. At some point in time, perhaps after he became Paul Newman's personal bodyguard on the Fort Apache, the Bronx movie, the acting bud bit him. And his NYPD superiors agreed that a change of career might be good for him, and his life on the force now pales in comparison to his escapades as a nightclub manager, award-winning actor, and raconteur. And as you'll soon see when we talk to him. Hi, Squiggy. Welcome to Crime Prevention 101.
How you doing, Susan?
I am just fine, and it's such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Believe me.
Squiggy, let's kind of go back a little bit and talk a little bit about your career in the NYPD. And, you know, you told me that you got into a bit of trouble as a cop from time to time. Now, what happened? Why was
that? Well, not trouble like, drastic that I got in trouble, locked up. But what happened was I came on during the time when they were actually having the riots in New York, and we were young kids, and I was a cop. I was actually in tactical patrol force. It was called TPF in those times. Mm-hmm. So we went into that, and but I still had my my ways for my old neighborhood, which wasn't bad, but it was just a way of dressing and acting and talking that a lot of people didn't really think I was a cop, including my own family. You know, it was kind of bizarre. You know, I remember one time I was just a cop. I was a kid. I was in my 20s, and I was going to a wake, and my father's walking with me, and we're going through the neighborhood, and there's a couple of guys, my father's friends, and they says, hey, Hogan, he says, your son's got a gun. You see, I know. He says, not that they cared that I had a gun, but they just thought it was showing a little, maybe. I don't know. But and they turned around, and they said, he said, no, he's a cop. He says, you got to be kidding. He says, your son's a cop? He says, yeah. said, oh, okay. And they gave me some bizarre look, and then they kept on going on their way. But it was like, then I knew, you know, that there was definitely a conflict of interest.
Now, for my audience, which is international, and may not have seen A Bronx Tale, which I'm going to ask you about because you had a role in that. Talk about what the Bronx was like and why there was this conflict, because people may not know what was going on when you were growing up out there.
Okay. Well, the Bronx was very, very accurate in a lot of ways, and a chance is a friend of mine. I had some big parts in the movie, but it was cut out. I spent 3 months on the set. And it was a different world. I mean, my neighborhood and the neighborhood that was shown in Bronx Tale, you had no crime in the neighborhood. It was amazing. My mother could have walked the streets. The doors were left open. You never had to worry about, God forbid, somebody attacking your sister, your kid. That didn't happen. It didn't happen. There was no burglaries in my neighborhood, believe it or not. As tough as it was, and how many tough guys there were around, there, nothing happened. And it wasn't because of the police, believe me. They were more concerned about, God forbid, they get caught by the people in the neighborhood.
And the people in the neighborhood were the wise guys.
Exactly, exactly.
And
the neighborhood was, you could walk around, my mother used to leave her doors open. All the people on the block, they leave their doors open. Nobody even thought that a burglar would show up. Didn't happen. And it was just a way of living, you know. When I grew up over there, my uncle, who was a bookmaker at the time, I never thought there was even a crime to be. Everybody was gambling. My father, all gamblers, and I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. I mean, they weren't killing, they weren't doing anything harmful to anybody, and I never thought there was anything wrong. It was just you know, they would go out. There were all restaurants, all social clubs. And people just walked around, and they ate and drank, and I even told them my thing. You could leave my house at, you weigh 140 pounds, you come back, you're 30 pounds heavier, and maybe you are 20,000 more than you left the house for. But that was just a way of doing things, just a way of life.
And that's why you could have gone either way, and it was kind of it was kind of strange that with all of this going on that you chose to become a cop. And but you still kept your old friendships, and your friendships were...
I still have my old friendships. I still go down my old neighborhood. I mean, there's some... You know, when I was a police officer, I met some of the greatest guys in the world, stand-up, we call them stand-up, good guys. I loved them to death, and I still love the guys that I grew up in my neighborhood. I didn't work in my neighborhood. I didn't have anything to do with, with bookmaking. I didn't do that. I just did... You know, when I worked, I didn't get involved in bookmakers, because to me that would have been being a hypocrite. You know what I mean? To me, my family were bookmakers. Why would I want to lock up a bookmaker? It wasn't like a bad thing. You know what I mean?
And you might end up, having to arrest some friends of yours.
Exactly, my own uncle, which I love like my father. Yeah, I mean, that's what they did. And that's, my father, my mother thought that he was taking me, I was a kid, to the zoo. My father was saying, I'm taking the kid, we're going to the zoo. He took me to Belmont Racetrack, Aqueduct Racetrack, and the only animal I ever saw was a horse. You know what I mean? So this is just the way we lived.
I could see that this might have been, though, a little difficult for you in the long run.
Yes. So yes, it was. You know, like I say, it's not where your loyalties are. I mean, the police department was good to me in a lot of ways, and my friends. I was just in between both worlds, but not doing anything wrong.
So how did you get interested in acting, and what made you leave the police department?
Okay, I was on medical, actually. I left after, I believe, almost 13 years. And, I got a pension. I got everything, you know, and I left. They were doing a movie based on a friend of mine, my dearest friend, on his life story, which was called Fort Apache.
And mm-hmm. I remember it well.
I don't know if you ever seen the movie.
Oh, sure.
Okay, and I became we were bodyguards, and I was bodyguarding like Paul Newman most of the time, and a kid was a great actor, and he did a program called Wise Guys, Kenny Wall, if you remember.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah, and I mean, he used to practically live over my house. He used to call my mother, you know. And then I got, you get used to that, you get that bug. And it was great. I said, wow, you could actually get paid and do this. This is wonderful.
That's true. So you kind of just found your niche playing mobsters, and I understand maybe a little too convincingly. You won an award recently, right?
I just won, which I was shocked. I mean, I was against some major actors, which I didn't even want to fly out there. I was sort of embarrassed, you know, or maybe intimidated is the word. I said, oh, these guys are my favorite actors. I said, what am I doing? Who am I, you know? So they flew me out to Pasadena, and I won the best villain in a feature film award for the movie I did, Bronx Paradise, which I played a guy called Frankie Sunshine, was kind of an evil guy. Even though his name sounds nice.
And you actually beat out Michael Madsen.
Yes.
From Reservoir Dogs fame for this.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite actors in the whole world from Reservoir Dogs. I said, what am I doing here? What the heck am I doing in this place? You know, I said, I didn't want to go. You know, I was sort of embarrassed. I didn't think I belonged. And the producer says, go, fly, let me fly you out there. Just go. They nominated you. Go out there. And the film won, if I remember correctly, about 17 awards for best picture throughout the country. I mean, it did very well throughout the country.
So Bronx Paradise. And I've actually, I had Bill Lappy and Wayne Gorman who were...
Right. Wayne Gorman, they were great. I mean, Bill Lappy directed it, and Wayne Gorman wrote it and starred in it. And they wanted me to do it, and I said, okay, let's do it. And it did very, very well throughout the country. I'm hoping that it turned into a series. That's what I think they were trying to do, so I'll see what happens.
I love it. Well, there was a lot of authenticity in that film because Wayne Gorman is a former criminal, reformed.
Right. He's a reformed. There was all reformed people in this movie. Yes, there's a reformed criminal, reformed police. We're all reformed. And Billy is actually a retired police officer, the director.
If you can't win an award for that kind of realism, God, there shouldn't be any.
Right. I mean, it was so real that I actually thought I owned a nightclub that I was in there. I used to go in there and I said, listen, let me eat. They said, no, you don't own the place. You just acted in here. So I haven't sort of got into my role yet.
Absolutely. Now, I understand you're also a writer, and you wrote and starred in a successful off-Broadway play.
Yes, it was called, actually for my neighborhood, it was called Crotona Lounge, a place that I hung out as a kid. And me and James McSherry, we co-wrote it. James directed it and also acted in it. And it did great. For 3 months, it was sold out. I mean, it was really, really great. A play called Nonsense, James told me. It was the only off-Broadway play that sold more than we did, which is, you know, quite an accomplishment. I mean, it was good. We had some guys in there that were in Bronx Tale. They did me a favor. They were in it. And we had like 16 or 18 actors on the stage, and I played a guy called Matty the Hat, a bookmaker, which is hard to believe.
You had to stretch for that one, I know.
Yeah, then they wanted to know the kid who was a maniac. They says, where did you get this guy from? You know, it's a story about a kid who hits a number. And his whole life changes dramatically, but dramatically for the worst. And they says, who is this lunatic? And I said, well, 96% of him is me. You know, that, I mean, that, I just, it was about my life story. But, you know, we just changed it a lot for the play. But the character was based on, I guess me.
Mm-hmm.
Growing
I love
up
it.
In my neighborhood. Right.
I'm so sorry that I missed that one, but I understand you're shopping a new one. And Surrounded by Assassins.
Right. Me and James have been working on this for a couple of years. We've been just waiting. And it's a story. It's called Surrounded by Assassins. And it's about a cop with a drinking problem, which is not me. But it's a cop with a drinking problem. And it's really, really, not because James is one of the best writers I know. He's one of my dearest friends in the whole world.
And you're talking about James Sherry.
James McSherry. Yes.
Writer and producer.
And even though there's murders going on in New York, you know, from there's the Dominicans and the Italians, all this, and the cop's wife. The whole plot started in Biloxi, Mississippi. So it's not just your run-of-the-mill type of screenplay. It's you don't know who the murderer is to the very end. And the, and this police officer is being blamed for everything.
Well,
and I play a guy in there, too, called Frankie Cheesecake, which... and they kill me there, too. They keep on killing me.
That's not a very colorful name.
It's, well, it's actually a good thing. I told him, I said, just send out notices to all my creditors that I'm dead. Because... I just tell them to look at the movie. I really passed away. Just send a clip where they cut my throat in the Bronx Paradise.
Yeah, I know, but who's going to be afraid of Frankie Cheesecake? I mean, you know...
Frankie Cheesecake...
In
the movie, you would say, well, who would be afraid of Frankie Sunshine?
Well,
I sound to somebody that should be in vaudeville instead of a psychopathic killer.
Well, good point. Well, so yeah, I just want to mention that you tell your real life Bronx tales in a web series called the Squiggy Chronicles.
Right. It's on YouTube.com, and it's Squiggy. Squiggy, I actually have to be with a capital S. I haven't gotten to the century yet. I don't know too much about computers. Yeah. It's Squiggy, the number 4, and a capital U.
Squiggy for you on YouTube. And I wanted to tell my listening audience, if you want, it's a very raw, but it's very, very funny. You got to check it out. Squiggy for number 4, you. YouTube.com and
YouTube.com/Squiggy for you.
And one other thing before we leave, I understand that this may be your finest award so far. That I understand your headshot graces some of the most famous restaurants on
in my neighborhood.
My
headshot is throughout the neighborhood. You can't buy a calzone without seeing me.
And that's that's the equivalent of Sardi's. Everybody must know.
Oh, yes, it's better than Sardi's.
In Manhattan.
Being down my neighborhood, you just walk by and you see pictures of me all over.
You go to the Bronx and buy a pizza. Okay. Squiggy, thank you so much for being with me today. Don't forget, everyone, Squiggy Chronicles, YouTube.com, Squiggy for you. I got more good stuff coming up. Don't even blink.
All right, Susan, thank you, and I hope I see you soon.
Thank you.
News. Opinion.
Hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information.
News. Opinion.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now, back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
This is Crime Prevention 101. Thank you so much for joining me today. And don't forget that we also have a blog site, crimeprevention101.com, where you can find out more information about show topics and my wonderful guests. And I apologize, somebody emailed me that I'm not up to date. And if anyone out there is a blogmaster, because my blogmaster kind of quit on me, and I'm kind of trying to flounder in the water on my own. So I would, you want to send me a little note from my from Crime Prevention 101. If you can help me out, I would love to have you. Now, this segment coming up, the star is going to be me. And I haven't had a chance to kind of get a lot of stuff in my desk, and I thought maybe I would take a few minutes and pass some information along to you about it. First of all, this being Crime Prevention Week, there's a really nice video, free video, called In Times Like These, and it comes from the National Crime Prevention Council. And those are the people that do the Take a Bite Out of Crime campaign, McGruff the Crime Dog. And this is a really nice little video. And you can just write to the National Crime Prevention Council or email them. And they will send you this video. It's very helpful. Lots of tips in there. I thought I'd pass that along. Now, let's see. I got an email from a woman by the name of Christy. And this is a very great, this is a good story. She says, I was leaving the grocery store and about to unload the cart of groceries into my car when I noticed that someone had made an X in the dirt on the back right side window of my car. And she said, I have good instincts, so I followed them. I wiped off the X. And I put my purse away in the floorboard of the front passenger side and then started toward my trunk to unload the groceries. And she said, and then I noticed four young men coming towards me. I looked for the leader of this pack of wolves, and he was easy to spot by his body language. And that's true, by the way, that you can tell who the leader is. People will defer to him, and he looks at, you know, it's like that alpha thing. So she goes, I looked straight at him and gave him what I call a Texas shit-eating smile, which gives the impression that I have a gun and that I've been looking forward to the opportunity to use it. And she said, and then I kept putting my groceries away. And when I looked towards these idiots again, they were gone. So she goes, apparently they feared that they were walking into a trap, and they were also confused by the fact that the X was gone. She's, please share this with others. It might help. And I think there's a couple of really good things that that happened. That X obviously was to mark mark the car that they intended to rob. Maybe they had observed her getting out of the car and going into the store. Maybe they assessed that she would be a good target. But when she stood her ground, when she made that eye contact with him, that Texas shit-eating grin that she said, and I'm sure that she was standing up nice and straight and tall, and this is what we call the non-victim attitude, and this is what will deter a crime, which will it will prevent it from escalating. She convinced them that there was something going on here that they didn't count on, and this wasn't going to be easy. And that's what they that's what most of the criminals are looking for. They're looking for something easy. So I like that, Christy. Thank you so much for sending that to me. And please, if you've got a success story or if you've got a question that you'd like me to answer, a crime prevention dilemma, send it to me. You can send it right through my host page on the voiceamerica.com website. You can send it through my Facebook page. I got a number of queries there. I host a forum on womansavers.com. You can post it on the forum. I'd be very happy to do it there as well for you. If you've got a question, I'm here to help. All right, here's another story I like very much. The headline is Elderly Woman Hits Attacker with Rock. And this this came from Fall River, Massachusetts. And the Fall River police say they're investigating the attempted abduction of a 66-year-old woman. And by the way, that's not so elderly anymore. Newspaper reporter here, your Fall River, Mass newspaper here. Anyway, officials say about 1 p.m., police responded to Kennedy Park for an attempted abduction. abduction. A 66-year-old woman said she was walking west along the middle, along a street in the park when she was approached by an unidentified female. The victim said the female told her that she had seen a suspicious-looking car in the area. The victim, police say, then armed herself with a fist-sized rock and continued to walk east to near some intersection in the park, and she was approached by a male. The male then grabbed her, attempted to force her into an older model gray or tan vehicle. She said the victim was able to fight the man off by kicking and hitting him several times in the face with the rock, causing his nose to bleed profusely. The suspect ran into his car, and he got away. And again, a couple of things that are really, really important about this one. Number one, she was prepared. She looked around in her environment. She picked up that big rock, and that's called weapon of opportunity. And anytime that you think you might be in a dangerous situation, you want to kind of look around for something like that. If you don't happen to have that pepper spray, which I really like and I recommend that people carry, look around for anything that's heavy. Look around for a liquid that you can throw into somebody's eye. Anything that's caustic or hot, like hot coffee, is a good weapon. Even throwing your coat over someone who's trying to attack you. Throw it over his face and then pick up anything that you can. So I love this. And again, that non-victim attitude, she wasn't going to go down without a fight. And it worked. Love it. All right. So this is Crime Prevention 101, in case you weren't sure where you were. Coming up next is my favorite part of the show, where I get to talk with one of America's Crime Stopper groups, and we try to help them solve a crime. And this week, we're going to be talking, going to go down to the Big Easy and talk about what's going down there after Katrina with the executive director of the New Orleans Crime Stoppers, the Greater New Orleans Crime Stoppers. So stay tuned.
Talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now, back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
This is Susan Bartlestone, and I just want to remind you that Crime Prevention 101 is available on iTunes. So you don't even have to be on your computer to listen. If you got, I think you can probably get this on your new iPad if you're one of those people that stood in line for that thing for 4 days, like somebody I know did. But in any event, we're there. Get us anywhere that you want. All right, now I want to introduce you now to Darlene Cosenza, who is the executive director of Crime Stoppers, Inc., and she has served in this capacity for the past 15 years. She's also a charter member and president of the Louisiana Crime Stoppers Association. And she has received so many awards for her crime prevention and community service that I couldn't even begin to mention. It would take up the whole segment. But I want to just mention two particular honors that she told me about. First, her appointment to the New Orleans Transition Executive Board, which had the task of selecting a new police chief, the new police chief. And she also received an award for her work developing the Crime Stoppers Safe School Hotline. So, Darlene, welcome to Crime Prevention 101.
Well, thank you, Susan. It's nice to be here.
It's my pleasure, and I just want to tell you that our hearts still go out to you guys down there. I can only imagine what a great service Crime Stoppers is providing to, you know, to New Orleans citizens after, you know, Katrina and what all has been going on.
Well, we've been our Crime Stoppers unit here actually covers, we call them parishes, but eight parishes. So it's been truly instrumental because within the eight parishes that we serve, most of the damage from Katrina were in at least three of those parishes: St. Bernard, Orleans, of course, and some in Jefferson Parish. So we certainly saw firsthand the devastation and what it takes to rebuild. And I think people don't realize, that it's truly a remarkable thing to see a city so devastated, then be able to see the growth that has happened. And particularly, you know, not only in our criminal justice system, we've seen some positive changes, but just in general with the types of businesses that people have been able to come here and new entrepreneurs, you know, to be able to get up and running and just to help rebuild in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. And you know, law enforcement must have had a tremendous job to do in the aftermath with all this devastation. And you know, I heard some reports here and there, but you were down there on the front line, so.
Well, certainly, no one was prepared for what happened here, and I think it shows you the resilience of individuals, particularly in law enforcement, who had no resources, very limited resources, communications being down, you know, what they can do to be able to help people. And I know on our end, our call center was receiving calls during the early, hours and with the first 24 hours into the 48 hours of the Katrina and the flooding. And that was very frightening. And, for those operators who are not in the New Orleans area, hearing the frantic needs for help. So it's a situation where we never want to see anyone else in the nation have to go through. But you learn, you pick up, you learn that there's some wonderful heroes out there, not only within our own ranks and within law enforcement itself, but within the civilians and certainly the citizens who came and helped, right after, and they continue to help and volunteer in the area.
Absolutely phenomenal, really. Like I said, our hearts are really still with you down there. Now, let's talk a little bit about Crime Stoppers in general and then the Greater New Orleans Crime Stoppers.
Sure. Well, Crime Stoppers in general, and of course this is now an international organization, and one of the statistics, and I hope I quote this correctly, but if you went on and visited Crime Stoppers International's website, I believe it's every 12 or 14 minutes a major crime is solved through a Crime Stoppers tip, and that's incredible. And one of the reasons why Crime Stoppers works is it allows citizens, and citizens are the eyes and ears, so it allows citizens to get involved in a proactive way, but to do it in a way that they feel safe, which is through anonymity. So when they call the hotlines, Crime Stoppers never, ever identifies their callers. They are assigned a code number. That information is investigated by law enforcement. So we're not, a Crime Stopper person, particularly in our area, we're not doing the investigations. We're passing that on to law enforcement. But the citizen who gave the information can always call and check on it and add on to that information. And I know there's citizens who live in areas where they are fearful to be retaliated against. So that this is a way that they don't have to have that fear. And then, of course, the other carrot here is that in many instances there is a reward attached for the information. So I think that is that added incentive that if someone is a little bit hesitant about making a phone call, you know, they can look at that reward at the end of the day, and possibly that would be the carrot that pushes them over to make that, you know, give that vital information. And Crime Stoppers information that comes through, many cases, law enforcement has nothing until that information, that tip comes through that helps to open the case or, you know, provide the missing pieces to the puzzle. And I know for our organization, we've been around since 1981, we've helped law enforcement through tips solve over 10,500 crimes.
Wow.
So that's significant, you know, crimes that may not have been solved without that one person's call into Crime Stoppers.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I am so delighted to be featuring a different Crime Stoppers group every week, because it is so important that people know about this resource that they have in their communities. And I'm thrilled to be able to do this.
Yeah, we appreciate that. One thing we've learned, particularly since Katrina, is the power of the media. It certainly can help solve crimes and help just focus the positive energy that's needed to happen on, you know, cold cases or whatever the issues may be.
Talk a little bit about the Safe School Hotline, which is a special program that you have.
Right. Our Safe School Hotline is a program that we implemented before Katrina and, of course, had to rebuild after Hurricane Katrina. But it's our program is different in the sense that all information is handled through our regular hotline, our phone lines. And now we also have email and texting of tips. But we allow children in schools, and we target the middle and high school students because we feel at the maturity level, obviously, it would need to be there for them to understand that if they want to give information on a campus crime or a crime that's planned to happen, I mean, we're trying to be preventative in nature. This is not just to be a reaction. This is trying to be preventative in nature. We allow students to give us a call on any of these acts that may be occurring that's against school rules or certainly, felony crime, certainly, and they can give that information to us anonymously. We then pass the information on to the school administration and to the law enforcement agency, if necessary, depending on what the information is, that works within that school system. The school does the investigation. They are able to get back with us, and at the end result, if the information leads to some type of action, now it doesn't have to be an arrest. It can be some type of action within the school guidelines. That student is eligible to receive a cash reward. And the student reward started about $25 and can go up to our highest reward is $2,500. Mm. And that's, of course, for a felony, like obviously a very serious rape, murder, or something like that.
Sure.
But a child could be eligible if their information lends to solving that type of case. And
that's
our kids,
wonderful.
And what's incredible is most kids we're seeing over the years, children, you know, only maybe 20% of them are looking for the reward money. They're calling for the right reasons. And we get calls on all different types of things, bullying. We get calls on just vandalism, fights that are planned to happen. But we've also had calls on suicide threats. So I just feel like there's such a need out there for children to feel like there's an avenue where they can give information. And I'm just thrilled that we, you know, have been able to do that.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it really has proven popular, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And we have, you know, slowly moved, you know, grown the program from parish to parish. And in order to participate in the program, we asked the school to allow us to come in and do a presentation for the students so they understand who we are, how we operate. We explain how we keep our information completely anonymous. We talk about, you know, being empowered to give information and be empowered to not be in the victim's, you know, cycle, to be in the victim cycle of just sitting there and letting things happen and not being able to give information. We talk about the no snitch mentality, which we hear about in music and we see on television. We talk about why it's right to get involved, how you can help your fellow students. And then at the end of the process, we talk about how our program actually works from when you make the first phone call or the email on up to the end, the conclusion of that tip. And, you know, kids seem interested, and they, you know, they do use the service. So we're real encouraged. If we can get them early, they're going to be, you know, as they grow up, they're going to be a better citizen. They're going to be involved. They're going to be volunteering. They're going to, you know, see the importance of the role that they play in the better of the community.
And I really love the idea that something like bullying can be reported, because These are just tragic. I've done a number of programs on this, and it's such a tragic situation. And most of the time, the school doesn't know what's going on. So this is a really good way to advise them without putting your own neck out there. Again, the anonymity hiding right there. It's lovely.
Definitely.
Wonderful, darling. Great thing. And I'd love to see this spread throughout the country.
Well, we have had a lot of programs, you know, call and get information from us, so we're real excited about, you know, being part of that.
Wonderful. Now, real quick, do you have a particular case that you'd like our New Orleans listeners to maybe help you on?
Sure. We have, since Katrina, we've had a lot of issues where people have obviously left the area. And what that's allowed us to do is to reach out to other locations. And we have one instance that actually was a murder that occurred before Katrina. And it occurred actually in 2004, July 2004. And the gentleman was named John McClellan. And this is up on our website. This also just hit America's Most Wanted website, too, if somebody wants the detail on the story. But he was a bartender working at a very lovely restaurant in our downtown area, was walking home that night in a very residential, low-crime area, and at approximately 2 a.m. that morning was the victim of a robbery and then murdered because I guess he didn't actually have cash. He was shot several times. He was able to, on the phone, give 911 information on the assailant, and this actually was at the intersection of Bel Air Drive and West Harrison Avenue in New Orleans, Louisiana. And he did then, you know, after a couple of weeks, regretfully in the hospital, he did succumb to his injuries. But there's never been any information on the suspect. So the suspect's description on this was a heavyset black male. He was wearing a blue bandana, a red cap, a white T-shirt. And again, shot the victim several times and just in the middle of the street. Now, because it was 2 a.m., this was a residential area. Regretfully, there's no witnesses, but this was not common of that area. So we're just hoping if anybody has information. The victim worked at a very nice restaurant. He was a bartender. He had, you know, a lot of friends in the city. And regretfully, we just had no new leads since this occurred back in 2004.
All right, well, let's give out the tip line and the website so people can contact you if they've got some information for you.
The tip line here is it's locally 504-822-1111, or we have a 1-877-903-STOP, the toll-free. And then the website is Crime Stoppers, GNO, for Greater New Orleans, gno.org. And this story will be up on the website. You can find that under McClellan. And, again, if there's any information that you might have or any crime that happens in New Orleans, please, you know, let us know. The first crime we solved after Katrina was a gentleman who had killed someone here on New Year's Eve in front of their children and had fled to a different state. And we got that information off our, you know, through Internet emails program. So definitely, you know, we all know that our criminals can be anywhere. So
that's right.
We appreciate the help.
All right, darling, thank you so much. That's CrimeStoppersGNO.com. It's my pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, same here, Susan. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, that's a wrap for now, my wonderful audience. But never you fear, because you and I will be doing this again next week, same time, same channel, when I'll have more stories that demand to be told, more hot crime topics for you, and, of course, lots of tips and resources. It'd be a crime not to listen. So stay tuned and stay safe.
We hope you got some useful information and inspiration this week on Crime Prevention 101. Susan Bartlestone invites you to join us again next Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Voice America. If you want to learn more about Susan's guests, sign up for her newsletter, or find out about upcoming teleseminars and workshops, go to www.crimeprevention101.com today. Have a great week and a safe week.